Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
On September 15, 1853, Antoinette Louise Brown became the first woman ordained as a minister in the United States, or for that matter, anywhere in the Protestant world. She was at that time an Orthodox Congregationalist, that is to say, a Trinitarian and a Calvinist. However, she did not have either the support or approval of any congregational conference, and she left the parish ministry a year later. She eventually became a Unitarian and returned to parish ministry in her late 70s. Now, Olympia Brown, no relation, was ordained as a Universalist on June 25, 1863. But with full denominational support. As an undergraduate at Antioch College, Olympia Brown had heard the Reverend Antoinette Brown preach a sermon and later said of the occasion, "It was the first time I ever heard a woman preach, and the sense of victory filled me up." So Antoinette Louise Brown, known after marriage as Antoinette Brown Blackwell, was a pioneer in liberal religion, in studying theology and seeking ordination, in her ideas of marriage as an equal partnership, ideas that she and her husband Samuel Blackwell lived out, in her philosophical writings about science and religion, in which she worked very hard to integrate faith with the latest research and science, which she kept up on. In her philosophical writings about science and religion and leadership in the women's suffrage movement, and in the founding of the All Souls Unitarian Church in Elizabeth, New Jersey in 1903. So I want to tell you, in brief, her life story. She was born in Henrietta, New York on May 20th, 1825. Her parents were Joseph and Abigail Brown, farmers of middling means but some education. The family was religious. Antoinette was the seventh of 10 children and the second after her older brother William to enter the ministry. At age 9, she made a declaration of faith and was accepted into adult membership in the Congregational Church. Following elementary school, she attended the Monroe Academy, a private school, a boarding school where male and female students boarded together in an unsupervised house. Think of it as sort of prelude to LRY in the 60s and 70s. Following graduation at age 16, she took her first job as a teacher. Now, during her teenage years, Antoinette got the idea that she could become a minister. After 5 years of teaching, she followed her older brother William to what was then the Oberlin Collegiate Institute in Ohio, we now know as Oberlin College, which was one of the first colleges to admit women. However, women enrolled in the ladies' literary course and received a diploma rather than a bachelor's degree, even though they took the same courses as the men. Yes. Progress in little steps. In Massachusetts, the parents who wanted their daughters to get a college education were teaching them at home with tutors. So, at Oberlin, she began her lifelong friendship with Lucy Stone. Stone, who was several years older than Antoinette, was already an ardent feminist and abolitionist, a follower of William Lloyd Garrison in particular. She also became friendly with Sally Holly, a Unitarian who introduced her to the writings of Ralph Waldo Emerson, which were not in the curriculum. And she and Sally challenged a rule in the college that prohibited women from reciting in class or participating in debates. They won their challenge. When Antoinette Brown declared her intention to become a minister, many took a dim view, and not just the men. Lucy Stone declared, "You will not be allowed to do this. You will never be allowed to stand in a pulpit, nor to preach in a church, and certainly you can never be ordained." Lucy wanted Antoinette instead to join her in her planned career of full-time reform work. But Antoinette stood firm, saying, "I am going to do it." And she took as her guide from the Bible the prophet Joel, chapter 2, verse 28, "And it shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters will prophesy." So following her graduation from the ladies' literary course in 1847, she began studies in the theological department, but again, not as a degree candidate, although she would complete the same course as the men who would get degrees. Other women had studied theology at Oberlin, but they usually married a male graduate and became a pastor's wife or missionary. Many assumed that she would marry her fellow student, James Taft, because they were friends and he supported her ambitions to become an ordained minister. But that didn't happen. Many years later, she would comment that it was unusual for men and women of her generation to have friends of the opposite sex, but that she and James were both unusual. Her theology professor was Charles Grandison Finney, who might be fairly described as a liberal evangelical in the Congregationalist tradition. But it was Mrs. Finney who tried to discourage her, saying, "You will never feel yourself wise enough to go directly against the opinions of the great men of the past." And Antoinette's response was, "Well, that is exactly what Professor Finney is doing, and we all feel that he is making a great advance of thought." So she was never admitted as a full student and received no degree at graduation. She had now completed the coursework for 2 degrees and received neither. But she had written an exegesis of Paul's admonition that women should remain silent in church, in which he argued that Paul was only arguing against excesses, not speaking per se. And the faculty liked it so much they published it in the Oberlin Quarterly Review. So when she then applied to the Congregational Association for a license to preach, which was customarily granted to students who finished theological school before they were ordained. And the association neither approved it nor declined to approve it. They just ignored it. So her friend James Taft asked the association to ordain them jointly. But Antoinette Louisa declined to follow that path. So she left Oberlin in 1850 with a full theological education as her male classmates, but no degree, and so did another woman named Lettice Smith, or Lettice probably. So for the next few years, she made her living on the Lyceum or lecture circuit. She was good, speaking on women's issues, abolition, and temperance. Using a pseudonym, she wrote for Frederick Douglass's North Star paper on abolition. Unitarian feminist ministers, all male, of course, invited her to preach from their pulpits. William Henry Channing in Rochester, New York, Samuel J. May, who was Louisa May Alcott's uncle, in Syracuse, New York, and Theodore Parker in Boston. Even her brother William, an Orthodox Congregationalist in Andover, Massachusetts, who opposed her ordination, still invited her to preach in his church. She must have been really good. In fact, her reputation was such that in 1852, Horace Greeley, the publisher, and Charles Dana, his editor at the New York Tribune, offered her a hall, room and board, and what was then an impressive salary of $1,000 a year to conduct weekly services in New York City. She declined. She was determined to go through the regular path. And this is not the only time that Greeley and Dana were willing to push the envelope, having already engaged Karl Marx as one of the Tribune's European correspondents. And that's another whole story about how Abraham Lincoln, who read the National Weekly edition of the Tribune, for a decade read the writings of Karl Marx there, and you hear echoes of that if you read his messages to Congress and some of his campaign speeches. Well, the next year, she was called to be the minister of the Orthodox Congregational Church in South Butler, New York, which offered her $300 a year, and she accepted the offer. She's ordained in September 1853 without the participation of any other Congregationalist clergy. And her Unitarian friends Channing and May declined to participate, saying she would have enough trouble with the Congregationalists without having Unitarians preaching at the ordination. But her congressman, Gerrit Smith, spoke. She had worked on his campaign. And a Methodist minister, an abolitionist named Luther Lee, gave the sermon on the text, "There is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus." 2 months later, she became the first female minister to officiate at a wedding. But two other important things happened during her brief tenure in South Butler. Lucy Stone and her fiancé, Henry Blackwell, urged Henry's brother, Samuel, to stop by in South Butler during a business trip through the area. The Blackwells were in various kinds of business. They were actually immigrants from England, but became very successful here. And their sister was the first female medical school graduate. So he did. And Antoinette and Henry began a courtship that led to their marriage in 1856. The second thing that happened was she began to admit her doubts of the Orthodox belief she was expected to preach around things such as damnation and the sinful nature of the human person, and resigned in 1854 and accepted Horace Greeley's next offer, which was to live in the slums of New York City and write about her experiences for the Tribune. Her articles were later collected into her first book, Shadows of Our Social System, in 1856. So in May 1855, Lucy Stone and Henry Blackwell were married, and they issued a declaration, which many of you have no doubt read, for it's in many anthologies of feminist writing, in which they decried the oppression of women within conventional marriage and declared that they would both keep their names. Unheard of at that time. Antoinette and Sam were married in January 1856. She decided to take the name Blackwell, but was not agreeing to a conventional marriage. In a letter to her fiancé a month before the wedding, she wrote, "You asked me one day if it seemed like giving up too much for your sake. Only leave me free as you are and everyone ought to be. And it is giving up nothing. You may sigh for a more domestic wife, and yet to have me merely go into New York to preach Sundays or go on a lecturing tour of a few days or even weeks won't be so very bad, will it?" And that's what would happen. Both couples then settled in New Jersey, although Greeley tried to persuade Antoinette and Sam to live near his farm in Chappaqua, New York, in Westchester County. But instead, Sam and Antoinette had their first home in Newark, and Henry and Lucy were in Orange. And it was in Orange that Lucy Stone would famously refuse to pay her property taxes because she couldn't vote. And she had no say over the taxes on her property. So Sam worked as a bookkeeper in New York City, so he wasn't, you know, doing traveling business trips himself anymore. And Antoinette kept on lecturing on women's rights and other issues. And she did her best to live up to the expectations Susan B. Anthony set for her. Susan B. Anthony said, institutions among the marriage are justly chargeable with social and individual ills, but after all, the whole man or woman can and will rise above them. I'm sure you will never be crushed nor even dwarfed by them. Well, crushed, no, but dwarfed, maybe. So as her family grew, she spent less time lecturing and preaching and more time working from home, though writing prodigiously and prolifically and being published, but paying more attention to managing the household, which Sam willingly shared in, though he was traveling from New Jersey into New York every day to work. And they had five daughters who survived infancy and one who did not. And for most of their lives, Sam worked a regular job in New York, and they always had a maid, which helped. And when she became pregnant the second time, she received more advice from Susan B. Anthony. Now, Nettie, not another baby, is my peremptory command. Two will solve the problem, whether a woman can be anything more than a wife or mother, better than a half dozen or 10 even. Mrs. Stanton, who you may know had a lot of children. Mrs. Stanton sends her love and says, if you're going to have a large family of children, go right ahead and finish up at once, as she has done. She has only devoted 18 years out of the very heart of existence here to the great work. But I say stop now and for all. It is a measure of Susan B. Anthony's high regard for Brown Blackwell that she wrote to Elizabeth Cady Stanton, such a body as I might be spared to rock cradles, but it is a crime for you and Lucy Stone and Antoinette Brown to be doing it. Through the 1860s and into the 1870s, Antoinette focused on philosophical writing and the study of science rather than lecturing on reform issues. But she still participated in most of the major women's rights conventions and preached at the ordinations of two Unitarian women to the ministry. Except for a short time in New York City, Antoinette, Sam, and their children lived in New Jersey. From Newark, they moved to Millburn, where they bought a farm, and then to a farm in Somerville, where Sam got into land speculation and actually made a lot of money for a few years and was able to stop going to a job in New York until the financial collapse of 1873 forced them to sell all the real estate they owned, even the farm they lived on. So Sam got another job in New York, and they moved to Elmora, which is now part of the city of Elizabeth, but was then a village on the outskirts. And meanwhile, following the Civil War, there had been a split in the women's movement. Anthony and Stanton wanted to hold out their support for black male enfranchisement until women also got the vote. And they formed the National Woman's Suffrage Association. Lucy Stone and Julia Ward Howe gave priority to enfranchising black males and formed the American Woman's Suffrage Association. Antoinette, of course, was very close to Lucy, she being her sister-in-law, but she avoided getting in the middle of the conflict. She showed that great Unitarian ability to avoid conflict in this regard and remained friends with all the parties, but for the period of that split took less part in the organized work for the vote. And she devoted her time to study, writing, and family. And after the two suffrage groups merged in 1890, which was 20 years after the 14th Amendment allowed black men to vote, she was very happy to rejoin the organized movement and was active from then on out again. In 1869, though, she had published another book, Studies in General Science. And in 1871, a novel, The Island Neighbors, based on Summers at Martha's Vineyard. And she published articles regularly in Popular Science, which in those days was not a fix-it magazine, but a very serious journal of science written in the language of laypeople rather than academics. In fact, Charles Sanders Peirce, the founder of the American Pragmatist Philosophical Position, published many of his seminal articles in Popular Science, which are now collected in great books and libraries of philosophy. She was in good company. She wrote two books that followed from her study of evolution and physical sciences, The Sexes Through the Ages, from which you heard the paragraph, and The Physical Basis of Immortality, in which she argued that the religious faith that she had in immortality had a scientific basis as well. Meanwhile, formally or informally, the entire extended Blackwell family, including Elizabeth and Sam's sister, the physician, had all become Unitarians. In 1878, the Reverend Antoinette Louise Brown Blackwell applied for and received ministerial fellowship with the American Unitarian Association. By now, there are 165 women ministers with parishes in the United States, 33 of whom were Unitarians or Universalists. Nonetheless, 25 years after her ordination, she was warned that our established churches are rather skeptical of women and, in fact, could not find a suitable position. However, in 1879, Oberlin gave her an honorary Master of Arts degree, which at the time she had gone to the theological school was the art customarily given to people who finished the theological course. But her writings on science were so well respected that she was elected to the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which was mostly made of professional scientists and academicians. Through the 1890s, the Reverend Mrs. Blackwell preached wherever she could, including Unitarian churches in Newark, Montclair, and Plainfield, a tavern in New York, and other places. She was going wherever they'd hear her. By now, her family was basically grown. But she declined to join two of her dear friends in women's religious projects, Julia Ward Howe's Women's Church and Elizabeth Cady Stanton's Women's Bible. But she did send Stanton copies of her theological writings, including the exegesis of Paul's epistle, and part of that was included in the resulting volume. In 1893, she published a book, The Philosophy of Individuality, in which she put forth her view of the benevolence of the universe. You heard some of that in that poem. And she was a speaker that same year at the World Parliament of Religions in Chicago, which had a lot of women speakers, but that probably helped because a Unitarian layman was in charge of the whole, a Unitarian minister, Jenkins Lloyd Jones, was in charge of the whole gathering. And the women's division, they had those, was headed by a Universalist minister, a female Universalist minister. But that same year also her lifelong friend Lucy Stone died. 2 years later, she and her husband sailed to England where her husband had been born, but she had never been outside of the United States herself. And she also got to preach in a tavern or two there. When they returned, they set up housekeeping on West 64th Street in Manhattan, where three of their daughters lived, one of whom, Ethel, had a medical practice there. Two of their daughters became physicians, taking after their aunt. Their daughter, Agnes, married Samuel Tom Jones in 1897, moved out of the house, and she and her parents and her husband left New York to settle in East Orange. They just couldn't stay out of New Jersey. But Sam Blackwell would go to work in New York every day, and he did it till he died in 1901 at the age of 78. When he and Antoinette had been married for 45 years. A year later, 1902, is another significant year for her. She published her first book of poetry, Sea Drift. But Elizabeth Cady Stanton died, and she officiated at the funeral, as was noted by Theodore in that front piece of the book. In 1903, at age 78, she traveled to the Middle East and then came back and settled with Agnes and Samuel Jones, her daughter and son-in-law, in the house they now had in Elizabeth, New Jersey. But she preached And that year she founded in Elizabeth the All Souls Unitarian Church and preached there every Sunday for a year. And then was able to donate the land to build a church and a house to serve as a parsonage, and they called a male minister named Arthur Grant. Now, the building is still there at the corner of Westfield and Stiles Street in Elizabeth, and it's a beautiful 1890s, early 1900s style church building, arts and crafts style building. But the congregation closed in the 1940s. In 1905, she preached a Sunday evening worship service at the meeting of the now consolidated National American Woman Suffrage Association in Seattle. She was 80 years old. Then she and some of her fellow suffragists took a cruise to Alaska. She then lived for a short time with her daughter Edith, a physician in New York City. But Edith died in 1906, probably from an infectious disease she contracted in her medical practice. So Antoinette moved back to Elizabeth, but had her own house near her daughter and son-in-law's, but didn't live with them. And more recognition came her way for her roles in religion and the women's movement. In 1908, Oberlin awarded her the degree of Doctor of Divinity and added her name and that of Lettice Smith to the roll of graduates of 1850 of the theological school. She was a guest of honor at suffrage parades around the country, to which her niece, Alice Stone Blackwell, Lucy's daughter, accompanied her. And in this book, you see pictures of them riding together in these parades, the aging suffragist and her middle-aged niece. She traveled to Central and South America in 1912. In 1914 and 15, she published her two last books, The Making of the Universe and the Social Side of Mind and Action. In 1915, at the age of 90, she preached her last sermons in Martha's Vineyard and at Elizabeth, New Jersey. Her vision and hearing were failing. She gave up her separate house and again lived with her daughter and son-in-law. And then the 20th Amendment to the Constitution was passed, which gave women the vote. And so on November 2nd, 1920, pretty much blind, she and her daughter Agnes went to the polls together and were among the women who voted in the first national election in which women could vote. And of course, she had to vote orally since she couldn't see to mark the ballot. But her daughter was there with her to make sure it was recorded properly. A year later, at the age of 91, she died in Elizabeth. So Antoinette Louise Brown Blackwell was a pioneer in liberal religion in New Jersey and beyond. She was a pioneer at Oberlin College seeking a theological education, which was hardly available to women at that time. And even collegiate education was rare at that time. And then she was a pioneer in upstate New York, which is where she had grown up and when she was ordained and served her first parish ministry. And although she spent most of her adult life in New Jersey, raised her family and wrote most of her books and founded a church in this state, her books traveled far and wide, and she was invited to lecture and preach far and wide. She was a leader in the women's suffrage movement and the only major leader of her generation to live to vote in 1920. And she and Lucy Stone and their husbands, who were brothers, modeled equality in marriage and child rearing. Of course, Antoinette had five children that survived, and Lucy only had one. I think Lucy and Henry had an easier job of that. And in spite of warnings from those who loved her and cared for her, she refused to let go of her dream of becoming a minister, and though she did hit roadblocks. But she became much more: a poet, a writer on science and philosophy, a suffragist, and yet a mother, counting among her five daughters, two physicians and an artist. She wrote of the unity of nature and the compatibility of science and religion, at a time when many authors were writing of the conflicts between science and religion. Antoinette Brown Blackwell was indeed a pioneer of liberal religion in New Jersey and beyond, so it seemed like a good way for the first Sunday of Women's History Month to reflect upon the life of this amazing woman who lived a long life in which she crossed all sorts of boundaries and challenged all sorts of barriers, some successfully, some not, but she never stopped until she became too frail to do any more.